It's time for the Big Three, brought to you by The Metal Store. Discover why The Metal Store has become the name to know for premier manufacturer of quality metal roofing. The Metal Store is your one-stop shop for all your metal roofing and metal buildings.
6 seconds to go. Here comes LeBron. We're tied at 103. LeBron into the forecourt. In on Ananobi. Gets shoved toward the side. Banks it up. Oh, he did it again. LeBron James kissed it high off the window and drops it through. The LeBron James legend continues as LeBron James has won game three for the Cavaliers.
The ability to have, you know, different things in my toolbox and the repertoire that I have. You know, instance in that game where I had an opportunity to go to something practice or kind of mess around with and tinkering shots and things and finding angles and things of that nature. So I think that's what it just boiled down to.
That man is good at his job. LeBron James talking about the game winner he took on Saturday night, a 105-103 Cavs win over Toronto, and it looks like a sweep is imminent in that Eastern Conference Finals matchup, and LeBron James continues to add to his legacy. Second game winner this postseason, fifth of his career, and wow, the numbers that he's putting up in this playoffs are just off the charts. It is the Monsters of the Midday getting you started on a Monday. Dusty Dvorak here today at MidCon Carriers in Oklahoma City. Mark Rogers will join us here momentarily. It is an AutoMax Monday, so we'll get with Mark here before too long. Also, that was one of the calls of LeBron James' game winner. Another call you'll hear later was from our very good friend Adam Amin. Missile, how you doing, Missile?
I am doing well, Dusty. Ready for another week? How about you?
Did you enjoy your weekend? It was absolutely gorgeous outside in Oklahoma City.
Oh, yeah, man. It was a great day. It was great weather for Cinco de Mayo.
It was. And we had a Taco Tuesday party for my daughter. Get it? Tuesday on Cinco. So it was kind of, we were very festive at the Dvorak household.
She's two.
Tuesday. There you go.
That makes sense. I caught it, man. Can't throw that one by me.
We had the taco bar going and all the goodies, so it was a perfect day for Cinco, perfect day to be outside here over the weekend in Oklahoma City. But Friday, remember I told you guys Friday on the show I was going to go dine with Adam Amin in Chi-Town, and we did just that. Went to a great spot, and him and I both had early flights Saturday. I was coming back to Oklahoma City, and he was headed to Cleveland for Game 3, and he is just on a run right now, Missile. He's gotten so many great games. Going back to the women's NCAA tournament this postseason, and we'll chat with him today at 105 and let him give his thoughts on what he's seen transpire with LeBron James in Cleveland in this series and really throughout this postseason. But, man, I mean, let's just keep it right here, Missile. I mean, what more can we say? I mean, I don't want to run like a commercial for LeBron James, but what this guy's doing is starting to logic in his 15th season. And we keep waiting for him to slow down or for Father Time to step up. Yet all he does is continue to impress and improve. It's just crazy the run he's on here in this postseason, man.
Yeah, I mean, just wow. What he's doing to the Raptors is just – it's just not fair. I mean, the Raptor fans are just watching that game, knowing they're going to lose, and then just watching LeBron rip their heart out. And it's just – it's amazing what LeBron's doing. I mean, he's clearly the best player in basketball. He's showing why. And, I mean, he's just, this postseason, he's just turned it on. He's willing that Cavs team to victory.
How do you not take the ball out of his hands, though, Missile? Yeah. Like, I mean, if you're Dwayne Casey, like, you have to get the ball out of that dude's hands, right? Like, I mean, to me, that's not just on the coach, it's on the players. You know, Dwayne Casey says, we told him to get the ball out, but maybe I should have done a better job of, you know, really expressing how much I wanted them to get the ball out of his hands. But come on, man. You know how that story ends. You can't let LeBron James take the length of the floor and be able to get any type of look off. And I know his wrong foot off the glass, kind of off balance, all that. But any look's a good look for LeBron James if he gets that close to the basket. So I just thought the Raptors, that was dumb basketball to close that game out. You can't let LeBron James get a look off and put the dagger into your hearts as he did.
Yeah, I think didn't Charles Barkley say that yesterday? He was breaking down the game. He said there's a chance to double team him right on the inbounds. They had to do it. They had to.
Have to. You just have to. Toronto's done. Cleveland is going to go on, and it sure seems like, barring a miracle from Philly, and it's not going to happen, they're going to meet the Celtics, which, man, you got to be impressed with the Celtics. One more thing. I got one more thing on LeBron before we move to another series in this NBA playoffs. The one thing that drives me crazy, and I was getting this the other night, so we're sitting there watching the game. We watched the game winner at the house, and there's a lot of discussion. And then you look on social media. Why is it, Miss? So maybe it's just the nature of we as a people. Maybe it's just as sports fans and what we do. But it's like instantly, this is what I got just at the table I was sitting at watching the game. And I think it's the same on social media. Well, he's not as good as Jordan. Well, he's starting to reach Jordan. It's like, why do we watch that? And that's the first place we go, right? Why can't we not just sit back and enjoy what this guy's doing right now? You know what I'm saying? Like, that drives me crazy. It's like immediately. That's the first thing people think of. Well, he's not as good as Jordan. Who gives a damn if he's as good as Jordan? He's pretty darn good right now. Like, really good.
See, my first thought was, he's better than Jordan. So, I mean, I went there at first. I think it's just something entertaining to talk about. It's an argument that people are having, you know? Generally on this, the people that the older you are, you're always going to favor the older player, and the younger people are going to favor the younger player. And I always say that the player that's younger is always going to be better. I say LeBron's the better player right now. And in 20 years, there'll be another player that comes up, and he'll be better than Michael Jordan.
Yeah,
so, I think
I think they're so different. I think they're so different.
He's dragging a team that has no business even being in the second round.
That's true.
All the way to the conference finals, it looks like, and maybe even the NBA finals. What he's doing is pretty amazing.
It is amazing, but I mean, like, it's apples and oranges to a degree. I mean, they're so different. They played in some eras with different rules, and like, again, like, I understand that this is part of sports and what we do. We love to debate. And boy, when there's lists, we love to debate lists, man. It's what we do. But it's like at the same time, I mean, at the position LeBron plays as a three or a point forward or whatever you want to call him, he's the best to do that I've ever seen. As far as the two guard, nobody's been better than Michael. And I wouldn't want the ball in anyone's hands in late in crunch time. If I need a basket, I want the ball in Michael's hands. So like, how exactly do you frame the argument? I think there's different ways you can, you know, you can look at arguments or who's better, and you could easily make a case for LeBron, a case for Michael Jordan, in my opinion. And this is one thing that I hate when I see these debates, though. This is one thing that drives me nuts. I think it's the stupidest point someone can make when trying to argue or debate who had the better career. And it's when everyone points to the NBA Finals record. It's like, that's just baffling to me, Missile, because what year was it? What year did LeBron have that amazing playoff run against the Pistons and they get swept by San Antonio? Was that his third year?
07, I believe, I thought.
So was that, but I'm trying to remember, was that his third year in the NBA?
Let's see. It would have been
third or fourth?
Yeah, let's see. He got drafted 03, I believe. So it'd been about his third or fourth year. Yeah, you're right.
Okay, third or fourth year in the NBA, and much like this team, he drugged them to the NBA Finals. I mean, I believe Booby Gibson was the next best player on that team. That's all I got to say, okay? At least this team has Kevin Love, okay? But he took them to the NBA Finals, and like the and they get swept out in the NBA Finals, and LeBron Young, he wasn't ready for that stage. Pistons were probably better than they were, yet they beat them in the East. Yet that is something that people point to and just rip LeBron for. Now, if you want to rip him for the way that he played or the lack of playing in the fourth quarter against the Mavs in 11, that's real. I can get down with that. But like, just to make your argument, well, one guy's 6-0, the other's 3-5 in the finals. That's, I don't know. I just think that is a weak, weak argument. Like, did Michael make it to 7 straight NBA finals? And it's about to be 8 for LeBron now. Like, at what point do you get past that? I mean, do you give a guy credit? So it's almost like, well, if you just would have gotten beat in the Western Conference or in the Eastern Conference Finals and not made the NBA Finals, that would be better for your resume. Isn't that unbelievably flawed logic?
Yeah, exactly. I think I brought this up last week. We talked about it a little bit during the afternoon sports beat. And I said, well, LeBron's never been knocked out of the first round if we're doing that. Michael Jordan got knocked out of the first round several times.
So, you know, again, I would probably always say that I'm a huge LeBron fan, but I'm also a big Michael fan. I think they're the best two that I've ever watched. And, I mean, if I have to rank them, it's hard for me to put anybody above Michael Jordan, though. I've never seen a bigger physical specimen or a more physical freak on an NBA floor than LeBron James. And I would say LeBron James is the most versatile basketball player I've ever seen, because he can guard all five positions and he can play all five positions on offense. I mean, like, from that aspect, I think LeBron's the best. But there's something about Michael Jordan and his ability when it matters the most to be able to come up clutch. And he just had that ruthlessness, that killer mentality, kind of, you know, similar like Kobe, but I think even up a notch, that I don't want to say LeBron doesn't have it, but it just doesn't, they don't appear the same. So I'll get off of the debate about LeBron and Michael. I would just urge everybody, instead of getting mad or all upset, just sit back and enjoy what we're getting to watch in this guy's 15th season. It's truly remarkable. Boy, the 76ers are stupid, Missile. I'm just going to say it. They're young and dumb, okay? That's why they're going to get beaten this round against Boston. It's my assessment from what I've watched in game two and then in game three. Young and dumb. They made very, very low IQ basketball plays down the stretch in that game on Saturday night.
How about Ben Simmons? He was scared to get fouled that line, instead of taking the ball back out. I think that was regulation.
No, that was OT. That was OT.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
19 seconds left. They're up one. He gets the rebound after the miss. And instead of, like you said, taking it back out, burning some clock, and either passing the ball to a shooter or just getting fouled, he puts it right back up like a moron, a stupid basketball play, and gives Boston the ability to go down, set up a great play, and get the win. Just stupid by Ben Simmons.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. But, I mean, give Boston credit. They made a fantastic play at the end of the game. They fought hard. And, I mean, Al Horford, late game, boy. That was impressive.
He's the difference in this series for me. You've got, I mean, listen, Jason Tatum's a rookie. Rozier's really young. But, you know, when you look at Philly, they don't have J.J. Redick, I guess, a veteran presence, though he made a terrible pass at the end of regulation. Just make you scratch your head and say, what are you doing?
I didn't think that was a bad pass.
Really?
The one that was stolen? I thought the Sixers should have came up with that. But, I mean, I thought Al Horford just made a really good play on the ball.
But again, for me, Al Horford, being that veteran presence who's kind of been there, who's been in some battles before, aside from that, there's a lot of youth on the floor. I think he's been the difference, and his veteran leadership is what – remember the blow-by in game two? He blows by Joel Embiid to put him up five. So I've been really impressed with Al Horford, and boy, what Boston's doing, they've got one heck of a coach. One heck of a coach in Brad Stevens. I believe we have Mark Rogers. Marcus, you joining us now?
Some technical difficulties. We should have this solved here pretty quickly. Look, I could not, when I was driving in today, I feel sorry for the patrons in Midwest City where the hump man was earlier, because apparently they're wading through about 3 feet of you-know-what that Hump left behind today with his discussion on the Cavs. So
tell me you're with me on that, please. Tell me.
I Craig a pizza. Okay, so I owe Craig a pizza. I basically lost a bet to prove a point. The Western Conference playoffs have not been close. They've not been competitive. The Jazz have one win. The Pelicans have one win because the Warriors fell asleep. That thing is getting closed out in 10 games. All right, so my line was off by half. The Humper took advantage of my
I told you that was too low at the time, Mark. You set yourself up for failure.
But my point is, I don't mind paying the pizza. The point is proven. But here's a guy that can't sit there and admit the fact that he's smarter than this. The regular season in the NBA is not the playoffs. It's not the playoffs. And he's trying to say that the trade made the difference for the Cavs when the guys that they traded for aren't even playing.
You heard me say that, though. I mean, I brought those points up. He didn't want to hear that.
Well, that's ridiculous. I mean, the reason the Cavs are doing what they're doing is because of LeBron. I mean, last week, that was some of the worst reasoning I've ever heard in my life, that LeBron's defensive regular season efficiency was in the 300s. so what? He doesn't. I mean, he's at the age that he is. He shouldn't be grinding it out 82 games a year in the regular season. Matter of fact, Russell Westbrook could probably learn a thing or two from him about the way that he plays in the regular season. I mean, look, it's ridiculous to even say that, and it's ridiculous to ignore the greatness of LeBron and what he's been in the playoffs. I mean, he just made a bad, now that's a bad bet right there. I mean, that was a bad one. To discount Cleveland in the regular season after he's already fallen for that a couple of times previously is a bad bet. All right. I mean, the fact that I'm going to lose this bet by a half game when this Western Conference playoffs end in 10, because the two best teams in the league are playing in the West, and the two teams they were playing aren't that good. That's what's going to happen. So,
well, anyway, this will be the third straight year I collect free pizza from the Hump Man, because he's been fading LeBron and the Cavs for what seems like as long as I've been on radio here now. And yes, somehow he tried to convince himself, I think, that he's actually won the bet, because he said that by Cleveland's willingness to trade so many players at the trade deadline, that just proves that Craig was right, that that team could not win the East. And I can't help him. My only assertion as to what might be going on with the Hump Man is he did hurt his back playing golf last week, so maybe he's on some pills. That's the only thing I could think when I was listening to some of his rationale.
It's 3 years worth of pills if you're going to consider the way that he's counted out LeBron. The trade has had a zero sum effect on what the Cavs have done. It's been that LeBron has raised his game, and the fact that the East is still watered down.
That's right.
Still not very good. It may be good in the next couple years. Boston's got a great coach. They've got a good group of young players that are playing really well, but I don't think that team is going to beat LeBron. But we'll see. It might be a fun series. I can tell you this, that Brad Stevens will defend LeBron better than what he has been in the first two series, because those two teams have done nothing.
All right, when we get back, we'll continue to touch on the NBA playoffs. We got to talk about the Kentucky Derby. One of us picked the winner on Friday. We will discuss, and also we have a very secret microphone that made it into the Cleveland Cavaliers locker room to hear what some of the other players, not named LeBron, how they feel about LeBron and kind of what some of their roles are throughout the season. All that and more right here on the Monsters of the Midday. I'm at MidCon Carriers today, 9600 South Sunny Lane Road in Oklahoma City. Mark Rogers is at AutoMax on an AutoMax Monday. More to come here on the Monsters of the Midday. Cleveland in their playoff run, not on the floor necessarily, but what can we do to help you, LeBron? A little skit from SNL on Saturday night. We laugh, but I think there's probably some validity and some truth to that skit. I'm at MidCon Carriers today, 9600 South Sunny Lane Road in Oklahoma City. Mark is in Norman on an AutoMax Monday. Marcus, that was pretty funny and well done by SNL on Saturday night.
It never made it. It didn't make the show.
Sorry, you're right. You're correct. It was just in the, they had filmed it, but it did not make the show. I guess I just watched it on the, interweb. It was good.
I watched the show. I watched SNL, usually DVR it, but Donald Glover is the host. He did a pretty good job, but yeah, I don't know why that didn't make the show. They always have some good skits, some funny stuff. So.
And, again,
hey,
I would say
the Derby winner, man. Congratulations. That was an unbelievable run. The track was sloppy. And Bear called the race exactly like it's set up, with the speed coming on the inside. It was a pretty fast fraction early on, which did set up for the closers. They weren't able to close and get to where they needed to be, but that was a great run from Justify. Man, it was, you got to give credit to the jockey who put him in a good position to win, and that was a huge effort. It was very impressive.
It was very impressive. It was a fantastic race. I really enjoyed watching it. But I'm a little bit upset today, or I guess not today, but really Saturday night. One of my buddies was heading to – is almost the same scenario as a couple years ago when I met you up at Riverwind, and we were betting on the ponies. And, again, like I've told you, I'm a very novice horse race bettor. I don't know much about it all. But, like, to me, it's like just pick – if you think you know the winner, just bet on the winner. And so I was telling my buddies, like, I'm heading up there. You want me to put any bets in for you? I'm like, well, I like Justify. I think he's going to win. So, you know, give me something on Justify. I said, I don't know, man. You know, we can do this superfecta, trifecta, blablabla-fecta. So I'm like, you know, whatever you think, man. You know, whatever. I'll trust you. You're a horse racing guy. He's like, all right, this is what we're going to do. He's like, you know, give me three or four horses you like, and then we'll kind of put them together. So he texts me. He's like, all right, we got a superfecta. I'm 5, 6, 7, 10. Marcus, 5, 6, 7 went 1, 2, 3. The only one that didn't was 10, and he comes in 5th, and that was my boy Jack. My boy Jack let me down. I would have hit the superfecta, Marcus. Don't know what it would have paid. Don't even know exactly what that means. But if my boy Jack just kicks it in a little bit sooner and finishes in 4th, it would have been a heck of a day in the Dvorak household watching the Derby. Instead, it was just a losing effort.
The 15 horse affected the odds a little bit on that. You don't know what the superfecta paid? You really don't?
I don't even know. No, I'm not sure. I know we got it. It was like a $48 bet, so we were each in for 24. And he said that we boxed each of them, so it didn't matter which order they came in. I don't know what it paid out. I didn't even look. I didn't even want to know.
$19,000 for the dollar.
What?
Yeah.
You telling me if my boy Jack comes in 4th, I would have won $38,000?
No, I'm not telling you that. I'm telling you that the fact that my boy Jack did not finish in there affected the odds a little bit because the 15 had a little bit, different odds.
Yeah, because that horse was like 85-1, right?
$618.20 for your try if you would have had a 7-6-5-15. You know, there's nobody that's what ifs anything more than horse racing bettors. So you can sit there and say, well, if you like the 7-6-5, then you should just put 7-6-5, 7-6-5, 7-6-5 all. You're guaranteed to hit it.
Again, I wasn't there. All I wanted was Justify to win it, and I got talked out of it. Now, I had been there with you before, and you tried to talk me out of it, but I was there in person. I had my cash in hand, and I stuck to my guns. Unfortunately, since I was just sending somebody, I just said, I'm going to go with you. And in the end, it was still extremely entertaining, a lot of fun to watch. I think this horse, again, the novice horse guy in me, but listening to Bob Baffert before this race and listening to all these different experts and then watching Justify run, he's going to be tough to knock off this Triple Crown, Mark.
I think so. I think the Triple Crown might get the best of him, especially if the horses take off and run at the Belmont, but I don't think there's anyone that's going to come close to him in the Preakness.
No.
But that was a great run. Yeah, win in place, you'd have done just fine with that. Just fine.
Why couldn't my boy Jack? My boy Jack was bringing up the rear for much of the race, and finally kicks it in late, or just a little bit too late.
Well, he's run well, and there's no excuses. That's his style of race. I mean, he's going to be the horse that kind of came closing, and the pace was fast early on. It slowed down a little bit in the middle of the race, but there wasn't really many horses closing at all in the race. Started to get there a little bit towards the end, where the margin of victory was narrowing, but Justify is just a great horse. It's an incredible run. Got a great trip, too. I mean, a lot of times the Derby favorite or Derby favorites on a pretty good run here, I mean, you might have a winning horse that gets a bad trip, but that trip was just, it was perfect.
No, that it definitely was fun. Hey, you were hosting an event. You hosted events on Saturday and Sunday. How was your weekend? How'd those things go?
Weekend went great. The Juleps at the Jones is the first ever Juleps at the Jones, and we had a huge crowd there on Saturday outside, so it was a lot of fun there. And then last night was something really cool. I hosted an event for Sooners Helping Sooners and had Lincoln Riley, Bob Stoops, and Coach Switzer on stage for about an hour. And basically it was me interviewing the three of them, and it was a ton of fun. Those guys, it's a great cause for OU athletes, ones that don't necessarily make it to professional levels to play football or play other sports. And Jerry Pettibone and Jay O'Neill and Pam Kelleher, those are the staff members of Sooners Helping Sooners, do a good job of pointing them in the right direction. So Riley Nolan gave a speech last night, and it was a walk-on at OU, and he's done well in business after graduating college. And everybody had a good time. Coach Switzer was funny as always. Coach Stoops was really, really loose, and Lincoln was very, was open, and I thought it was just a fun time last night out at Southwind. I've never been there. Do I see the huge
place is legit, isn't it?
Barn out there. Yeah. That was incredible. They got a great view of Oklahoma City and Norman. I mean, you're way high there, just a little bit north of Goldsby. I mean, it's awesome.
And I have to imagine, I'm just guessing, but I'm going to take you back to Friday night. Though he doesn't play for your team anymore, I have to imagine Mr. Pujols is still pretty high in your fandom, but he had quite the night, and this is what it sounded like when he went for 3,000 on Friday.
Here's the 1-0. That's a liner into right field. It's going to drop in for a base hit. Albert Pujols has done it. Another milestone for Albert. You've just punched your ticket into the 3,000 hit club.
Well, there it was, Marcus. 3,000 hits for Albert Pujols. I believe now just the fourth player to be a member of the 3,600 club. Again, doesn't play for your team anymore, but his glory years were in St. Louis. Your thoughts on this milestone for Mr. Pujols?
You know what? There's not any bitterness for Pujols for me anymore. And really, at the time, it worked out to be a good deal for the Cardinals because he wanted so much money. It really would have wrecked the franchise, I think, what they could have paid going forward. And his career hasn't been as good since he left St. Louis for Los Angeles. But Tim Kurkjian had some interesting comments on him, said his first 10 years were maybe the best of all time, the numbers that he put up. But he's still going. He's got some, I would think, time left. Everybody always thinks he's a little bit older than what he's listed, but right now he's 38. Won't be 39 until 2019. But I wish him the best. So hopefully he can continue to crank it out. His next milestone that he's going to hit is 2,000 RBI.
Yeah, he's getting 1938, Marcus. So that will be go 3,600, 2,000. That's not a bad little resume. He's got to be, of my lifetime, he's got to be one of the most accomplished hitters that I've watched. I mean, and again, he's kind of fallen off here since he's gone to L.A., but, man, when he was in his prime in St. Louis, as you know better than me, Marcus, the guy was just incredible. I mean, incredible.
The years that he had in the middle of the 2000s were something else. Yeah, he goes in 03, 04, 05. He scores 137, 133, 129 runs, 43, 46, 41 homers in those seasons, and hit for a ton of average. So,
Now take me back to like the early years back in 01. Was this kind of anticipated by Cardinals fans? Like, because he's
not
a 13th round pick in 1999. He was the 402nd overall pick in that draft is what I'm seeing him. So I'm guessing this was kind of out of nowhere.
Well, he played some kind of junior college baseball in Kansas City when he was drafted. And that scout should probably be retired, you know, with merit. But Bobby Bonilla was on the St. Louis Cardinals in 2001, and they had decided that they weren't going to keep Pujols on the roster, but Bobby Bonilla's hamstring was hurt, and they go ahead and put him on the roster. And if you heard the montage on SportsCenter on Saturday when they were going over the 3,000 hit, they had Jim's voice on there talking about Albert Pujols with the Diamondbacks. It was one of the first series that they had of that season, was in Arizona, and Jim told me at the time, he said, no, the team really loves him, but they put him in the lineup, and it's like Wally Pipp. He was Lou Gehrig. He never came out. I played 161 games in that first year when he wasn't even supposed to make the club. So, I mean, you hit 37 homers and 47 doubles in that season. He drove in 130 in his rookie year.
Yeah.
I mean, here are his RBI totals his first 10 years in the big leagues. 130, 127, 124, 123, 117, 137, 103, 116, 135, 118.
Wow. Wow. Talk about Mr. Consistency. That's pretty incredible, Marcus. First ballot Hall of Famer, and just again, there was for about a 10-year stretch, as you just mentioned, as good a decade run as you'll see from the plate. And congrats to Albert Pujols.
And during that run, Dusty, the lowest he hit hit only under 312 twice in those 10 years, 314 and 312. 312 is in 2010. It's the only two times that he hit under 320.
Power and average. Man, that could really do it all at the plate. And as you mentioned, he's still going, right? I mean, he's definitely his prime has passed him, but he's putting together a pretty good year for the Angels out in L.A. By the way, and kind of a nice little segue, it's what we do in radio. Nice win last night. I was up late night, past midnight, watching your Cards. Get a nice win. So, nice sweep of the Cubbies over the weekend as well, Marcus.
That
was good weekend for Cardinals Nation.
It's beautiful. They didn't walk off fashion. Unfortunately, the game Saturday afternoon came at the cost of Yadi Molina's boys because Zaya took a beating, and he's out for a month. Cannot be good. We got to take a quick break.
No.
We'll return with more. Dusty is at MidCon Carriers. I'm here at AutoMax Hyundai of Norman. It's the Monsters of the Midday on the Sports Animal. Oh, yeah, and the playing of LeBron. Did you see that Skip Bayless basically on Twitter insinuated that LeBron's shot was a miss? That he wasn't indeed trying to bank that shot in? I mean, what an idiot.
Craig's it's clear now to me what's gone on. Craig is hanging out with his or listening to his high school buddy far too much as it relates to anything about LeBron James.
That was an unbelievable shot. That was a ridiculous shot. Of all the things that happened in the weekend, that was the most ridiculous, absurd thing. Left-handed, high off the glass, and good. The second most ridiculous thing that happened over the entire weekend, Dusty, was poor Benny Roethlisberger's comments. The guy that feels so upset that the Pittsburgh Steelers made a good move, got a guy that was undervalued in the draft in Mason Rudolph as a backup quarterback. What a joke!
I told them when the season was over, I felt really good and was planning on coming back for, 3 to 5 years. So I was surprised when they took a quarterback because I thought that maybe in the third round, you can get some really good football players that can help this team now, and nothing against Mason. I think he's a great football player. I don't know him personally, but I'm sure he's a great kid. I just don't know how backing up or being the third, who knows where he's going to fall in the depth chart, but helps us win now. But, that's not my decision to make. That's on the coaches and the GM and owner and those kind of things. So if they feel like he can help our team, so be it. But I was a little surprised.
Okay, so a little background on this, Mark. He does a weekly radio show in this time slot with these hosts in Pittsburgh during the fall, okay? But it's only from September through January. That's it. So I listened to the whole interview in its entirety. He had to have reached out to these guys and told them, hey, I want to talk about this. You know what I'm saying? So this wasn't like he was caught off guard. To me, Big Ben, he went to them. He was seeking out the spotlight so that he could express his displeasure with this draft pick. And I got to tell you, Big Ben's acting like a baby, man. He really is. He's acting like a baby, okay? This is the National Football League. The National Football League is referred to all the time as survival of the fittest. That's what it is, survival of the fittest. They draft players each and every year to take your job. That's what they do, plain and simple. Each and every season. Quarterback is no different than anywhere else. This wasn't a first-round pick. This wasn't a second-round pick. This was a third-round pick where they felt they got really good value on a player that had slipped. And, when they've got a quarterback who's going into, I believe, his 15th year next year, okay, who's had some injury problems and who has himself said, I don't know how long I want to play this game, to the point that the last several years he couldn't commit to the next season at the regular season end. So they don't know exactly what they're dealing with in Pittsburgh as far as the longevity and how long Big Ben is really going to be a capable quarterback for him. So you've got to look big picture. The NFL's about big picture. I know everybody wants to focus on the right now, but it's about you've got to step back and you got to look at it in its broad terms. And Big Ben, I think, A, he's being a baby, and B, he's just a little bit nervous and uneasy. Okay, I don't think this is really about that he thought they should have used those picks on on something else that could help this team right now. I think that he is upset and he is unnerved that how dare they go get a third round pick whose stature is similar to mine and he's been kind of compared to me and coming here to take my job. I'm just going to throw one name at you. His name's Tom Brady. Okay. Tom Brady's a little bit better than Big Ben, a lot better, but these are the draft picks at quarterback since Tom Brady's taken over. I'm just going to go since 08. Kevin O'Connell, third round pick. 2011, Ryan Mallett, third round pick. 2014, Jimmy Garoppolo, second round pick. 2016, Jacoby Brissett, third round pick. Three thirds and a second round pick since 08. Okay. And Tom Brady had well established himself by that point. He was even younger. They didn't even have to use a quarterback at that point. But you know what? This is part of what you have to do as an organization. You can't, you have to look big picture, and in the draft, when you can get some value, regardless of what the position, you have to be able to be forward thinking and make those picks. The Pittsburgh Steelers made the right choice in selecting Mason Rudolph, and now Big Ben wants to get all upset and wants to act like a little baby about it. And it's pretty clear to me, I think that him and Mason will probably be able to work things out, but this is going to be a rocky relationship. It doesn't sound like Big Ben wants to be buddy-buddy with Mason.
Well, he had time to think about it. This wasn't an impetuous, just right-off-the-cuff thought where he was upset. And so, look, then Big Ben was hurt this year. He mentioned that he was thinking about hanging it up and all that kind of stuff. I think Jim, you know, Jim was pretty – I think the Steelers have kind of run amok a little bit. I think Tomlin's a pretty good coach, but that looks like to me it's just kind of everybody out for themselves. I mean, that's clearly what Ben Roethlisberger is. You would need a backup quarterback. Clearly they need a backup quarterback better than what they have. What if he goes down for 8 weeks in the regular season? And doesn't he want to make the playoffs so when he comes back they can be a contender? I just don't know how much time he's got left in the tank. So considering all those things, he should understand why they made that move.
What more does he want, though? He's got the best running back in football. He's got arguably the one or two receiver in football. He's got weapons. They went and got a receiver in the second round. They have a Juju Smith-Schuster. What's the guy want? He's got weapons all around. He's got as many or more weapons than any other quarterback in the National Football League. What's he want? Again, to me, this is very petty. I don't like this from Big Ben. At the end of the day, I mean, this is the way I will say this, though. This is one thing I will say. I don't like that he said it, but it's the truth and it's the reality. And we're always wanting professional athletes to be honest. There's a lot of times players hate, and I mean hate, whenever an organization drafts at their position. Plain and simple. Because they know that if I dip, if I slip, if I get hurt and this guy gets an opportunity, he's going to take my job. I mean, that's the reality of a locker room. I thought it was interesting. He basically said, I'm not going to help this kid. I'll show him where the playbook is. But he wants to ask me questions. Why am I going to help him? The same has been said about Tom Brady's entire career. I can tell you, when I went to Chicago, aside from Tommy Harris, my buddy, who I wasn't competing with necessarily, there wasn't defensive linemen, defensive tackles that were just going out of their way to make sure that I had the playbook down right, that my technique, my steps, my hands were in the right place. You know, I mean, so I don't have a problem with that necessarily, but big picture, when you want it to look like quarterback organization, everybody's on the same page, and to your point and Jim's point, it has kind of seemed like Pittsburgh has lost their grasp on the locker room and on just kind of the overall demeanor of the team. This doesn't help that in any regard whatsoever. So I expect more out of Ben Roethlisberger, Mark. I don't expect him to get all upset, to call the radio show he does and go on the radio show so he can rip the organization for taking a quarterback, not in the first, not in the second, but all the way down in the third round. Come on, Ben! But you're bigger than this.
Yeah, bigger as a baby. We have another hour to come. Adam Amin called the LeBron runner. Game 3 victory for the Cavs in Cleveland. So we'll talk with Adam next right here on the Monsters of the Midday.
Tight. What a playoffs this year for LeBron James. Another game winner. His second of this postseason. And on that call was our very good friend, the one, the only, Mr. Adam Amin. What, man, what a run you're on, and great job once again. Fantastic call on the buzzer beater on Saturday night.
Dude, do I have to credit you with this based on the fact that you and I had dinner on Friday night? Like, did you leave something for me? Did you leave a little bit of magic in my backpack or something like that? Do I have to credit you for this?
Absolutely you do, yes. Hey, listen, man, good things happen when you and I get to hang out. You know that.
Absolutely. No, it was tremendous, man. It's just, this is what you hope for. You hope to show up and watch chaos ensue, and that's what we've had. And not only in these playoffs, or not only in this series, but in these playoffs, especially watching what LeBron's done with the game winners and the multiple 40-point games and the incredible skill set he's shown up, all of these things. It's been something else to watch, man.
Where'd you guys eat on Friday? Give me the rundown. What was for dinner?
Cool. I hope I treated Dusty well. We went to RPM Italian, one of my favorite Italian spots in the River North area of Chicago. A little more newer restaurants, I would say, a little more trendy places. But this is Juliana Rancic, who does either E! Or the Food Network or whatever. Like, her and her husband own like a chain of these things in Chicago. It's like RPM Italian, RPM Steak. So we went to the Italian joint. Excellent carpaccio, which for me is one of the most important things. Very good meatballs. I think Dusty had the swordfish. I had the bucatini. The desserts were outstanding. So I, you know, good bottle of wine. That's what we're gunning for. A good bottle of wine, a good meal, catching up with my dude, and we had a great time. I hope I'm speaking for him as well.
It was a 10, Marcus. It was fantastic, and it was some. It was a very trendy place. We had to have a late dinner, but the food was fantastic. The ambiance was great, and he nailed a nice bottle of wine. So it was a 10, a 10.
And a nice ripasso for those of you curious. A nice ripasso is always good with an Italian meal, especially if you're going for a little bit of pasta. You want a little bit of the spice in the wine to make sure it complements what you're eating.
What is going on with the Raptors? They have disintegrated in a matter of three games. I mean, their best player has gone to the bench. They have no idea how to cover. They keep throwing one guy at LeBron the entire series, and then he has systematically destroyed them. But is this going to cost Dwayne Casey his job after winning the East in the regular season?
Yeah, I don't think it should cost him his job. But, I mean, he's been thoroughly outcoached in this series. I think that's fairly obvious.
By LeBron!
But you know what? It's just incredible, though, the stranglehold that LeBron has on the Toronto Raptors. You know, I think they're 1-10 in their last 11 games in Cleveland. And by the way, the one game that they won was last year's regular season finale when Kyrie Irving didn't play, LeBron didn't play in that game. So how much stock do you really want to put in it? And I'm telling you, there is zero fear factor right now for the Cavaliers. When they look across and see the Toronto Raptors, there is no fear in them. They know they have their number. They know they're better. They're better coached. The matchups have been in Ty Lue's favor. They've been Jonas Valanciunas, who had 20-20 in game one, got shut down in the fourth quarter and in overtime by Tristan Thompson. Tristan Thompson, who barely played until game seven of the first round. He played, I think, 23 minutes in the first six games of that series, and all of a sudden he's coming in and absolutely shutting down the biggest body that Toronto has in the middle of their offense and in the middle of their defense. But now Ty Lue, who was criticized for leaving Kevin Love in as the five, a position where he's not really comfortable playing compared to where he is at the four, Kevin Love all of a sudden figured it out. He's back-cutting Jonas Valanciunas to death. Valanciunas barely played in the fourth quarter for Toronto in Game 3 because Kevin Love was torching him. So I don't think it's going to cost, or nor should it cost, Dwayne Casey his job. He won 59 games. They're a really good basketball team. But some teams just don't match up very well with others, and this is a clear-cut case of a psychological, mental, and frankly physical edge that Cleveland has over Toronto right now.
Talking with ESPN play-by-play voice and extremely good friend of the show, Mr. Adam Amin. He was on the game-winning call Saturday night, Cavs-Toronto. So you get a chance, and you've had the Cavs a lot here in this postseason. You get a chance to sit right there, you know, by the coaches, by the players. You can hear a lot of what goes on. There's this narrative that Ty Lue is just a puppet and that LeBron James is the coach, is the GM, pulls all the strings. From your vantage point, is that valid, or does Ty Lue not get the credit that he might deserve?
Listen, going to Cleveland, especially in the first round after they had lost game one and everybody was panicking after, you know, Victor Oladipo had a great game and, you know, LeBron was very passive early in the series. I go to Cleveland and I'm doing some radio hits with our friends out there, and all of them are saying, oh, Ty Lue doesn't know what he's doing. Ty Lue doesn't know how to coach. And I'm going, guys, you really believe that? Because, frankly, I've seen it for 2 years in the playoffs. He's really good at making adjustments. And I keep trying to defend him and being an apologist for him, perhaps in the eyes of some people, that it's LeBron. I'm not saying LeBron doesn't have a major impact on how they approach game planning, how they approach late game situations. Obviously, LeBron's going to have the ball, but it's also not that complicated when you have LeBron. You let the man go to work and let the offense run through him. But Ty Lue's the one who has to make the adjustments. And I just told you guys with the Kevin Love thing, he was criticized heavily after game one when they won by 1 point in overtime. Why are you sticking with Kevin Love at the five? They're so much better with Thompson at the five and Love at the four. And he told us, because we asked him about it before game two, and he said, if Kevin starts making shots, which he's clearly capable of doing, I think at that point he was shooting something like 32% from the field after game one of the second round. He's like, if he starts making shots at the clip that he's capable of, there's not going to be any stopping him, because now Jonas Valanciunas has to go out on the perimeter and respect Kevin Love's shooting ability. And that's what they ended up doing in game two. And Kevin Love backdoored him and backcut him to death. And then they had to take him out of the game because he couldn't keep up with Kevin Love. And then he wasn't being taken advantage of on the defensive end with the big body of Valanciunas. Ty Lue going to Tristan Thompson in game seven of the first round and him having the great performance he had. George Hill going back into the starting lineup. Kyle Korver and J.R. Smith going back to the starting lineup to have veteran shooters out there in the middle of that Indiana series. These things have all helped. I think the biggest thing is a lot of these guys just didn't execute for most of that first round because Indiana, to their credit, played an exceptional defensive series and took LeBron and a lot of those guys out of their rhythm, but they won the series. And now Ty Lue is winning the coaching matchup against a guy who's 20 years older than him and has way more experience and has been one of the great coaches in the NBA the last several years. So does Ty Lue not get enough credit? 100%. He never gets enough credit for the adjustments that he knows how to make.
I know who is coaching well. That's Brad Stevens. There's a lot of yes. evidence to prove that. I don't know what to do to blame for the 76ers here. Is it Boston doesn't have a ton of playoff experience. The 76ers have very little playoff experience, but it certainly looks like one team isn't ready for this moment, and that's Philly.
You know, and that's what I thought might hurt them when they got to the first round. Just even in the first round, I thought that was going to be an issue, just their lack of experience and the lack of clutch gameplay that they've had. Now, I asked Brett Brown about that, and he did say, we've gotten better in that aspect over the course of the last, I'd say, month of the season. And I think that's fair. They played better in late-game situations. But again, they were playing really well for that entire 16-game winning streak. They weren't playing a ton of close games against high-level competition. So I think it is a lack of experience. Ben Simmons does not know how to make adjustments just yet, and that's fine. That's, again, understandable when you're in your first playoff series. Brett Brown hasn't coached as a head coach in the playoffs. I understand that as well. So I'm not going to blow this out of proportion and say, well, Philly's not ready or Brett Brown is a terrible coach or he should be fired. I'm not going to go that far because, frankly, I think Brett Brown is the perfect guy for a young team, but he's also a young coach in the eyes of the NBA playoffs. So I'm not going to say the process is not working or whatever. I'm not going to go that far. It's just Brad Stevens gets it. He has experience in this part of the season. He understands what this is like. And by the way, I know they're young. These are really young guns for Boston right now with Rozier and Tatum and Jaylen Brown. But these are guys that, at least a couple of them, Tatum, obviously, it's his first run, but those other guys have been in the fires before. Terry Rozier played big games last year in the playoffs. Jaylen Brown played really big minutes against Cleveland in the conference finals last year. And let's not make Boston out to be a bunch of slack John yokels, all right? Like, I get that they don't have Kyrie Irving. They really didn't have Gordon Hayward this season at all. And would they be more competitive in a conference finals with those guys? Yeah, of course. And I think Cleveland is going to be a prohibitive favorite in the conference finals against them. But these aren't a bunch of nobodies. Al Horford's a perennial all-star, and these are really good players, and they've got good role guys coming in off the bench. So, you know, with Brad Stevens and that lineup that's got the experience, I'm not shocked that they're playing this well.
As a guy who's been on a few airplanes, especially as of late, I can tell you're at the airport. Where are you headed? Where are you going?
So we're going to Columbia, Missouri right now. We're going to get ready for the SEC softball tournament. It'll be exciting to be back with our crew. I'm going to see our buddy Molly McGrath this week, Dusty, as she's going to be hosting some of the sets for the SEC Now show, and that'll be very fun for us, and then we'll go back to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Very, very nice. I'm guessing
How much of a chance does Boston have, Adam?
I think they have a chance to be competitive. I still think, like I said, Cleveland's going to be a prohibitive favorite in that series. I think just with the fact that they have the experience, they won in five last year with a lot of a lot of the same guys that are currently playing. I think Boston's good enough, though, to win at least one, if not two games in the series. I think it'll be more competitive than it was last year. Remember, it was a five-game series, but two of those games were straight-up blowouts. In Boston, nonetheless, and Boston had to have a buzzer beater to win in Cleveland last year. So I think it's going to be more competitive this year. I do think Brad Stevens does at least come into the series with an advantage, but I would still pick Cleveland to be a prohibitive favorite going into that series. I would think it'd be more competitive, though.
So long as they got LeBron James, I'm not picking against them. Last thing I've got, just being around them, you've had so many of their games, and you obviously have private conversations. What's the feeling on LeBron James being back in Cleveland next year?
I don't know why you would think that he. Sorry, we have friends of ours coming across the plane here. I don't know why you would leave. In all honesty, now I understand the money is not going to matter. LeBron makes $30 million a year. He's going to make $30 million next year. He makes so much money off the court, it doesn't even matter. Like the cash isn't going to be a big issue for him. I think some of it is family, and he said it in the past. Winning and family are the two biggest aspects. I don't know why you go to the West, because you know to be in the NBA Finals every single year, you have a much better shot of that in the East right now. Golden State is still Golden State. They're still going to have cap room to maybe go get one other free agent or a role guy. They're still going to have those, you know, their core group of Green and Durant and Curry and Thompson. I just think it's easier to get to the finals in the East right now, as good as Boston could be, as good as Philadelphia is becoming. I don't know why you go to the West. If you go to Philly because you think you have a great shot, I'm fine with that. But I think that's, if it's L.A., it's because of family. If it's Philly, it's because of winning. And if he stays in Cleveland, he'll be a legend for the rest of his career. And especially if he wins another championship, he'll be set for life.
Great stuff as always, man. Safe travels, and tell Molly I said hello. She's got a big day coming up, so she's got to get herself to get hitched. So you guys have fun in Columbia, man. And we'll talk again soon, man. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, boys. Appreciate it.
True pro Adam Amin, as he's boarding an airplane, never miss a beat, and he gets the radio hit in. Pro, Marcus, pro.
Nice, that's nice. Hey, did you see the odds that I sent you today?
Yep.
Was offshore sportsbook for Paul George and LeBron.
I got those numbers. It was funny you sent that, because I got those same numbers last night from our boy Todd Furman's Twitter feed. So I guess these kind of just came out here over the weekend. So, yeah,
offshore.
Absolutely.
They're offshore. I mean, it's not anything that you can walk into Caesar's Palace and make a wager on, but those odds – they think that Paul George is going to L.A., and it's not even close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just so people know, so this was this is based off of, what is it, betonline.ag or betonline.ag, I think is the site. Dave Mason, B-O-L. This is where will Paul George land next season? Lakers minus 175, Thunder plus 400, Sixers plus 500, Nets plus 700, makes no sense to me. Pacers plus 750, that makes no sense to me. Cavaliers plus 1,000. So, as Mark said, Lakers, I mean, the prohibitive favorite right now to land Paul George, at least says offshore books in Vegas. And on that note, LeBron not nearly as clear-cut, but I believe Cleveland, the leader in the clubhouse, followed by Houston and Philly coming up second, third, and then L.A. as Vegas sees where potentially LeBron might land this offseason.
Wouldn't that be a coup for the Pacers if they get Oladipo? You want to talk about winning a trade.
God,
get Oladipo and Sabonis for long-term deals and then just rent Paul George 1 year to the Thunder? I mean, that's going to be would be the greatest trade of all time.
That would be you would definitely be getting the most out of that trade for sure. Yeah, so it's got this one that I'm seeing, Rockets, Lakers, Sixers, Cavs, top four for LeBron. I don't think the Rockets make any sense. Like, I don't think anyone just says no LeBron, but I don't think the Rockets need to be or should be in the LeBron James sweepstakes. Do you, Mark? I mean, they got a pretty good thing going. They may win it all this year.
Well, put it this way. I don't think that it helps them win 65 games or 68 games, and I think that they would have kind of problems in role identification, but they solved all those this year. And I think Harden can play off the ball some. If you had that team with Chris Paul, James Harden, and LeBron James, would they be good enough to beat Golden State? I think the answer is they might be close. I mean,
but you may not have Clint Capella. You know, you may not have Eric Gordon coming off. You're like, I mean, you're going to have to mix and match and move a lot of pieces.
If you don't have Capella, that's a problem.
Fit.
If you don't have Eric Gordon or Ryan Anderson, then it doesn't
matter. Ryan Anderson can go, but.
Right, that's what I'm saying, is that they have to clear some space. I mean, he would be the guy to clear the space. But that does a lot for me with Houston, because they're not all of a sudden just a team that relies quite a bit on the three-point shot. They got a guy that can go get a basket anytime he wants in an ISO situation, and it makes them really well-rounded to the point where they can do a little bit of everything. So I don't think the Rockets can beat the Warriors, but if they had LeBron, I might have to think about it.
If I'm LeBron, I've had so much success in the East, I'm not changing that. I'm staying in the East. My two teams that I'm trying to choose between are right where I'm at in Cleveland, or who I really think would be unbelievably interesting is Philly. And I know Ben Simmons and him are very similar players. That makes it difficult. I just think from an overall leadership standpoint, and talk about the perfect guy to give them the blueprint and show them how to win and how to get to NBA Finals, it's LeBron James. So to me, that'd be my two choices if I'm him. Cleveland or Philly. I want no part of that Western Conference. And if I'm Missile, if your Rockets, I mean, I know this sounds dumb to say, do you want LeBron James? But understanding what you would potentially have to give up from a roster standpoint, do you want to see your Rockets go after LeBron in the offseason?
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's LeBron James.
He's LeBron. I mean, look, it's like the Warriors when they went after Kevin Durant. I mean, there were people saying, oh, they might get worse.
It's a little different, though. You know that. It's different. They had cap space. They could bring him in. They didn't have to change much. That was kind of just adding, and it was based off of Steph Curry having that way low contract because of the ankle situation. That's not the case in Houston. They would have to completely change their roster to make the space to bring in LeBron.
Yeah, it would pretty much be Harden, Paul, Capella, and LeBron, and that's if they, you know, decide to keep Capella, and they'd basically have four players, and they'd already be in the tax.
Right.
So, yeah,
I hear what you're saying, but it's a little bit different in that regard, but it will be he's the biggest domino, right, Mark?
It makes them an unbelievably well-rounded team, but, I mean, I don't think you have to analyze this a whole lot. I mean, yes, you take LeBron. I mean, because I think at some point in time, the physical decline is going to happen. There's too many other guys around the league that we see that are in a diminished state. So I don't know that LeBron 2 years from now is going to be the best player in the NBA, but he clearly is right now.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. I just, man, if he makes it, he's going to make another NBA Finals. That'll be eight straight. I don't know how you walk away from that and you say, now I want to take my talents to the West.
Well, he's done it at three different places.
I understand the streak he's on currently.
But that gives him. I mean,
why wouldn't you want to stay there?
Because I don't think the regular season doesn't matter. But what that does for sure is it gives him a chance to win a title. And you know, people were tweeting this the other day, and I thought for a second, I'm like, man, this dude is killing it so much. Is there a chance that we could say he might be better than Jordan? Then I snapped myself back into reality a little bit and said, no, I'm probably caught up in the latest greatest recency bias here. But if he is going to be considered in the same breath as Michael Jordan in that category, he can't just get to the finals. He's got to win championships. And I think that the team in Houston is the closest and the best place he could go if he wants to win another championship right now. But to me, it's not even close. I mean, you did notice that Golden State was on that list for him.
Golden State's not on that list. Come on. You know
no, they are on that list.
I know it's on the list, but that's just what Vegas puts out. He's not going to Golden State.
Probably not, but my point is that, you know, if he wants to win a championship, Houston's where he should be. All right, we got to take a break. We'll come back. Royce Young is, I don't know if Roy, listen, you can start the rumors right now if you want that Royce is moving to Salt Lake, but apparently Royce decided that he loves Salt Lake so much that he's going to stay over and possibly miss the next segment. So hopefully we'll have Royce at 1:45 today.
Bet today, by the way. Tell me that.
I'm an Automax Hyundai of Norman. Thank you so much for asking, Dusty. It's your number one volume dealer. Over 500 new Hyundais in stock. And just like Dale City last week, they got the all-new Kona here starting at 19.5, and they have 40 of the all-new Konas. The new Tucson starts at 19.999. That's a good poker hand, four nines. So get by and see us here in Norman at Automax on an Automax Monday.
Very nice. I'm at MidCon Carriers, 9600 South Sunny Lane Road in Oklahoma City. Call them at 405-237-1300. Great website, midconcarriers.com. And they're looking for CDL drivers. And if you're looking for top pay, low-cost health, dental, vision, and life insurance, it's available for you. Driver's going to get home weekly, out and back for eight. Monthly bonuses, Oklahoma City-based company. There's new equipment, got some beautiful Peterbilt trucks, and you get paid vacation. Phil Brady's the owner, great man. It's a great company with opportunities for you. Call today, 405-237-1300. The Ultimate is battling me on text message, and we'll continue to discuss Big Ben. And what did Mason Rudolph have to say in response? That next. Last couple of games, Clint Capella was a beast in the paint. late in that game. I can't say I'm overly surprised, Mark. And, you know, as we talked on Friday, and we had Matt Pinto on, Matt Pinto was ready to bury the Houston Rockets. And I was like, wait a minute now. Hang on just a minute. But, boy, Houston left no doubt in game number three in Utah as they get off to a huge lead, and they sweep the two games away from home, and they send this thing 3-1 back to H-Town. I had both of those series going in five. That's why I didn't like your over-under 9.5, and if I had to bet money today, I'd say both those Golden State and Houston will advance in five to set up the series of the year in the NBA. Wow. I don't know if you – am I here? Okay. We're just waiting on Marcus?
Microphone's not on.
Oh, hi. Yeah.
Hello.
Hey there.
Now, the Jazz are limited offensively, I think. I mean, Donovan Mitchell has said some impressive things in the playoffs, but the Thunder made the Jazz look a whole lot better on offense than they are to me.
But the Thunder are so close, Mark.
That ain't what I thought. I mean,
so close.
The Thunder should have won. In my mind, the Thunder should have won that series, but they didn't, execute well enough.
They should have. Well, they were favored to win. They should have won, but they're not as good. They're not as good as Utah. I mean, that's kind of just the reality of the situation. So, listen, those series are over as we expected. I don't think Boston will get the sweep, but then again, I expected Philly to win game number three. I do expect Cleveland to close this thing out tonight against Toronto. Eastern Conference matchups tonight.
Do you have any interest in the NHL? How about the NHL? We could have a Las Vegas Winnipeg final.
I think the Las Vegas Knights story is just incredible.
It is pretty good.
I mean, they're going to go to conference finals in year number one, Mark. An expansion team, for goodness sakes.
It'd be two, certainly, if Nashville can win and then go home and win with their great home ice, I mean, it would be, those are two certainly non-traditional NHL cities.
Does Pittsburgh, Washington, Pittsburgh's been Washington's nemesis. This thing's got Game 7 written all over it. I think Pittsburgh wins at home tonight, but then that Game 7 is going to be very interesting. That'll be a big game for Alex Ovechkin in his career.
Washington was down 2-0 to Seabus. Mm-hmm. So they've rallied, man.
Yes, they have. Playoff hockey, I like it. I don't get a chance to watch as much as I'd probably like to, but if there's nothing else on, there's no NBA or nothing else on, I'll sit there and watch some playoff hockey.
You saw Yachty get hit on Saturday, right?
I did.
Why are people so afraid to say what happened? I mean, that is not a groin injury. That is an injury where the groin is located, but that is not a groin injury. That's an injury to the testicles.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that may make a lot of people wince. It's certainly not risque or juvenile to say it. The dude got hit in the nuts, and they had to operate on him. That's
you
not a groin injury.
You have been kicked in the testicles.
It's true.
I mean, yikes. He stayed in the game.
That's a tough cat, man.
He really, baseball players aren't the world's toughest guys. I think they had to relieve the pressure.
You could get, it was like elephantitis or something. Like he could get,
I think it swelled up and not in a good way.
Man.
Yeah.
That's tough. That just hurts to think about, really.
It's tough, so tough he stayed in the game. Baseball players aren't the toughest people on the planet, but that's tough. That's tough guy tough for anything.
There's no question. Huge credit. To your boy Yachty.
I thought he was.
And we hope his testicles get better soon.
I hope it's only one instead of
heavy
both.
Ice. That'd be a tough spot, you know, because you got to ice them down, but at the same time, you know as well as I do, cold in that region is not a man's best friend.
I'll be real honest with you. I haven't had a lot of things cold in that region. So I wouldn't know.
You've never been in a cold tub, dude?
Well, look, that's not just isolated to that region.
I'm just telling you, that region, it hurt. I mean, it's not fun. I mean, above the toes?
Any part of your body. When you get into a cold body of water or a cold tub, any sensitive area of the body, it's tough when it goes in.
I'm just going to tell you right now. Toes, toughest thing. That's why you got to get to footies. Okay, getting your toes in the ice tub, I mean, that's brutal. That is pain. After that, though, aside from the twig and giggleberries, you know, it's really not that bad. It's kind of overblown.
What about the nipples? That's pretty bad.
Well, I guess.
I mean, if you get the lower body in there, it gets a little sensitive when you get it more towards the head region, right? And then if you're going to dunk your entire head, that becomes another problem.
What type of cold tubs are you getting in, man? You submerging in cold tubs?
I haven't been in a cold tub in, I don't know, a long time. If I'm just talking about, I've got every once in a while into like a cold lake water or swimming
No. I'm talking about ice cold, man.
You and I got into an ice cold swimming pool over at Center Legends not that long ago.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
We went in all at once. That was a good way to do that.
It was just a quick in and out, though.
Sometimes hanging around is all it takes
for the long term. We might have Royce Young. We might not. One thing I want to get to, though, there's a couple of NFL stories that I found interesting. And if we have time, I'm going to circle back to the conversation I had about Ben Roethlisberger and Mason Rudolph, because the ultimate is like, you know, isn't it so cliche, Mark, that Big Ben, I mean, this is isolated to Big Ben, right? I mean, Big Ben has gone off the reservation. He's being a whiny baby, okay? And he's worrying about something he really shouldn't even worry about, a third-round pick at quarterback, and he's voicing his displeasure for all to hear. Okay, so he's already making an awkward quarterback room and situation for Mason Rudolph in the organization just because he's pissed off. Okay, so this is all about Big Ben, but just like a Steelers fan would, they want to try to spin it and turn it into a Tom Brady conversation. Now, I mentioned Tom Brady, and I rattled off since 2008 three third-round picks and a second-round pick, only to point out Tom Brady wasn't calling into sports talk radio the week after he was drafted and griping about it. And talking about how bad of a pick it was for their organization and this and that and just going on and on and on. Well, Jim, of course, wants to say, well, you can at least acknowledge that the Jimmy Garoppolo situation was handled poorly. I mean, was it? I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo was going on his fourth year in New England. It was put up or shut up for the organization. It was either this is the next quarterback of the future or you got to trade him. I think Tom Brady just went and said, yo, get rid of this guy. I'm your quarterback. And everybody wants to like, paint Tom Brady out to be this like evil, awful person when that's really the only thing the organization could do. If Tom Brady had been making it a point to get on New England, you know, Boston, EEI, to get on like the week after the draft and rip the organization about a drafted quarterback, he's had four different opportunities. Yet I don't remember him ever doing it. So I don't see how in any way there's anything similar, there's any really parallels to draw, but much like Steelers fans do, boy, let's deflect away from us and let's try to point and somehow make this about Tom Brady and how he's been in the wrong. Because if Ben is wrong, we better make sure to point out that Tom's been wrong somewhere too. Steelers fans, man, they got to. Tom Brady and the New England Patriots are so in Steelers organization and fans' head, Mark. It's crazy. I mean, they're like, he's like LeBron in Toronto. I mean, that's what Tom Brady is to Jim and Steeler fans. Just in their head. They can't beat him.
But it's so selfish. It's uber selfish to the next level for him. Again, he's been an injury prone quarterback that said he doesn't know how much longer he has left in the tank. It's a third round pick. Why wouldn't he just say, yeah, I'm looking forward to mentoring Mason Rudolph coming here, and you know, we're gonna need 55 guys to win, because usually you do in the NFL. Remember what happened to the Super Bowl champs?
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty good example. I don't compare it to Tom Brady. I get that. Different things have happened, and I know what you're trying to do is point out the fact that the Patriots have drafted a lot of quarterbacks in the
draft. That's all I'm pointing out. Right. I'm pointing out that happens at all organizations, at all positions, and as a player, you obviously don't like it when someone is going to come challenge you for your quote-unquote manhood or your position, your job. You don't like it, okay? No players in the National Football League like it, but Ben Roethlisberger, he made a decision and a choice as a veteran supposed to be mature, face of the franchise, again, to hit up the guys he trusts, and he does his local sports talk radio show all throughout the season, and in the offseason, he wanted to make it a point to have this conversation and say these things as it relates to Mason Rudolph. It's weak. There's no way to slice it. I don't remember other quarterbacks doing this. It's weak. And Big Ben is above this, man. This should be way below him. He shouldn't be worried about some third round pick. But I'll tell you what, one thing I will say, and this is why I think Mason Rudolph's a good pick. because you don't have to worry about Mason Rudolph going rogue or challenging authority or trying to show up Big Ben. Here was Mason Rudolph on NFL Network as he responded to the Big Ben quote.
You know, if I was Ben, I'd probably say the same thing. You know, he's a competitor. You know, obviously he's a lot of confidence in himself like I do. And, yeah, I mean, he's going to be a future Hall of Famer, and I would expect him to say that. So, you know, I'm just looking forward to going in there and learning the system, you know, competing or raising my level of play, preparing like I'm the starter, even though obviously I won't be to start, and just waiting, you know, waiting and being prepared for whenever I, you know, get my time, whenever my time comes to be ready and take advantage of it.
No surprise there, Mark, right? I mean, no. Mason Rudolph, he knows his spot. He knows he's a rookie. He knows there's no winning that battle, and he's going to say and probably do all the right things. That's why if there is the right guy to be in this spot, and even if Big Ben, and I think Jim's right, we texted over the weekend. As soon as I saw this Friday, I had to shoot it over to you and Jim. I thought it was very interesting. But being the guy, at least a little bit that I've been around Mason, and he appears to be, and what I've heard he is, he's going to win Ben over at some point, and Ben's going to like him, going to take a liking to him at some point. But I do think initially, whether it be, you know, some rookie hazing or just a veteran quarterback who's not going to relinquish his control over that room in the, you know, his status as the quarterback and not try to give any tips or helpful hints away, I don't think he's going to make it the easiest initial transition for Mason Rudolph. But being the kid that he is, Mark, I just think he's going to conduct himself and say and do all the right things and probably force Big Ben to find a way to like him. That just seems like the type of young man that Mason Rudolph is.
I agree. All right, we will play Royce Young Roulette. Will he be with us? Will he not? That's next, right here on the Monsters of the Midday.
To the day here on the Monsters of the Midday. Hope you're having a great Monday. I'm here at MidCon Carriers today, 9600 South Sunnyland Road in Oklahoma City. Mark Rogers is at AutoMax in Norman. Welcome to the show, Mr. Royce Young of ESPN. Royce, thank you so much for fitting us in your busy calendar, sir. How you doing?
I would have it no other way, Dusty. It's the priority of my day right here.
Well, I'll tell you, when we talked to you last week, Utah, they had kind of a little bit of momentum going back in their great home court advantage in Utah. I mean, maybe this series is going to be very much in question. And then Houston comes out and just smacks them in the face. I mean, just your thoughts on the weekend sweep for the Houston Rockets.
Yeah, the Rockets basically reminded everybody that they were the best team in the NBA this year. And they did it. They became the best team in the NBA, Dusty. Not for the reason that a lot of people thought they were the best team, which was the Mike D'Antoni, 7 seconds or less, shooting lots of threes, you know, getting up 44 threes and Morey ball, scoring with analytics. It's because the Rockets are one of the best two-way teams in the NBA. And what swept these two games in Salt Lake City was really the Rockets were, I thought, fairly average on the offensive end. But they played some outstanding defense. And, you know, it's one of those things where obviously Chris Paul was magnificent in Game 4. Harden was pretty solid in both games. But to me, the MVP of these recent two games has been Clint Capella. And he has absolutely dominated Rudy Gobert and completely owned the interior, shut off Donovan Mitchell driving to the rim, and really just kind of confused Utah overall. So, you know, as you kind of watch this Rockets team, it all turns to, okay, so this is great. They look really good against the Jazz, but, you know, how is this going to look in the next series? And I can tell you, if Clint Capella can be this much of an interior presence, it's just going to be that the Warriors-Rockets series is really just going to come down to who shoots the three better in any four given games. And I think the Rockets will take their chances in that.
What is Clint Capella without James Harden? I mean, defensively he's all right, but he just seems to fit that system so well.
Yeah,
and he's one of the top centers in the league. I mean, I'm not taking that away from him. I'm just saying is that what's his potential for growth? If he wanted to, say, leave as a free agent, would he be a bad investment because he depends so much on screen and roll and lobs to the rim?
I don't know that he'd be a bad investment, Mark. You know, I mean, he's kind of Tyson Chandler-ish to me. You know, like, I think he's got really good instincts. And, you know, obviously, there's no question about it. Playing with a passer at the elite level of James Harden is an extreme advantage. And not just Harden, but Chris Paul as well. I mean, Clint Capella has the luxury of playing alongside two of the best passers in NBA history. So the defensive impact, that's on Capella. He's just fantastic. And, you know, that's him. But there's no doubt about it. I think that you can kind of see it in this series here. And one of the main differences between Gobert and his impact and Capella and his impact is Gobert is relying on Donovan Mitchell, no Ricky Rubio. There's no Ricky Rubio to get him involved. Joe Ingles, Alec Burks, Raul Neto. I mean, these players can't really get Rudy Gobert involved. And a lot of these big guys, Mark, they are reliant upon their guards to get them involved because, you know, we don't see the traditional, you know, pick and roll, you know, back to the basket big men that you know, you used to see. That big men score in today's NBA largely because of the space on the floor or because their guards can get them shots. So, yeah, there's no question about it. Capella is a product of how excellent James Harden is. But, you know, I think that maybe he wouldn't be quite as productive with a lesser passer, but I think he's to the level now that you put him almost in any system and he's going to be a really good player.
Impressive response yesterday by Kevin Durant and the Golden State Warriors. They looked awful on Friday night, and they come back and are the defending championship-caliber team that we expected to see in New Orleans. So that series seems to be pretty much over. And think all it took was a 4 a.m. text message from Draymond Green to Kevin Durant to get his game right.
I love how Draymond's got to take credit for Kevin Durant dropping 30 points. As if that's what it was. Yeah, Kevin Durant needed Draymond Green's text message as the ultimate motivation there for him to remember that he's one of the all-time greatest scorers in NBA history. But, you know, for me, I always like watching KD have those type of games because I don't mean this word the way it sounds, but he has to a degree been marginalized in terms of what his absolute ridiculous talent is because he's kind of fit in with what the Warriors do. I mean, there's nights where Durant is just not the dominant scorer that he's capable of being. So I love it when Durant, you know, has those games. I think he shot 27 times yesterday, Dusty, 28 times. So I really love it when he gets into that kind of aggressive mode and you get to just see what the guy's capable of because he is the best scorer in the NBA and maybe the most unguardable player when it comes to just one-on-one basketball.
I don't want Draymond Green to die like some idiot tweeted out over the weekend, and I don't want to punch him in the face like Charles Barkley does, but I'm not a huge fan of his. But you have to admit that KD listens to him. I mean, basically listened to him and changed cities. And then secondly, he did become more aggressive in Game 4, and that team did need somebody to get in their grill about the way they played in Game 3. This series should be over to me. I mean, I can't believe that they were so lackadaisical in the first half of that game against New Orleans. But KD needs a reminder. Every once in a while, he's pretty damn good.
Wait, real quick, Mark. You can believe it. You've been to New Orleans. You know as well as I do, when that play touched down in New Orleans, the last thing that team was worried about was a playoff game.
Huge-ass beer. Is that what you're saying?
I'm just saying. Bourbon Street's right there. And by the way, Draymond, I don't think that he actually couldn't sleep because of how poorly they played. I think he was probably enjoying what New Orleans has to offer till 4 a.m. in the morning. Just my thoughts.
Could have been.
Yeah. I think it is true, though, Mark, that and I think you saw it with Durant in Oklahoma City, and you see it now, is that there is an element of him, I think, that needs kind of somebody to pump him up. And I think he gravitates towards those people, those types of people. You saw it with Westbrook. You know, there was times where it was like, and that's where some of Westbrook and Durant sometimes kind of butted heads, is that, you know, Westbrook kind of had to give Durant that kind of jolt and get him, like, going. And I think you see that a little bit to the degree of Draymond Green. So I do think that is fair that he kind of gravitates towards that, to the type of person that can try to kind of pump him up and bring the best out of him.
Guys, he's not an alpha, right? Nope. I mean, we know that. He needs somebody to tell him, you know what I mean?
He admitted it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, so Draymond is the alpha of that team. Russell was the alpha of the Oklahoma City Thunder. I'm not trying to hold it against KD. That's just not his persona.
Yeah. So. It's not a slight. It's just reality.
Hey, I just wanted to let you know that the odds are up. And if you're still feeling as strongly as you are about Paul George, maybe we all need to throw our money together and go place a wager. Offshore right now, plus 400 for Paul George to stay in Oklahoma City, minus 175 to go to L.A. So if you're still feeling great about it, I'll trust your judgment. Let's make some money.
Hey, he and Russ went paintballing over the weekend. Doesn't that make you feel great?
Hey, you just say the word, man. I'll roll the dice.
All right. Well, I'm
Vegas is saying it. Vegas is telling us it's a long shot at this point.
Well,
not that they
I'm
know
sure
all.
They said the same thing about Russell Westbrook.
I'm sure they said the same thing about Kevin Durant not coming to Oklahoma. I mean, it seemed like most people kind of thought KD wound up in Oklahoma City, and we know how that turned out. Hey, Royce, great stuff as always. We'll talk to you again on Wednesday.
Thank you, Royce.
All right.
That's Royce Young of ESPN.com. Okay, Mark, I've got him primed and ready. I like Mondays because I get to get off the airwaves, and then I just get to listen. I get the ultimate all lathered up. He's like a bull. You know, he's got to sit in there. He's like those horses we saw the other night waiting at the start gate. Just open the damn gate and let me run. That's where the ultimate's at right now. So I'm sure he's got a lot of opinions, and I always enjoy listening to you and him go back and forth. Remind the great people where you're at today, Mark.
Automax Hyundai, it's the Automax Monday, your number one volume Hyundai dealer in Oklahoma. Over 500 new Hyundais in stock here today in Norman.
Very good. I'm at MidCon Carriers, and I'm looking at Phil Brady, the man that owns this place, an awesome guy, and they've got great opportunities for you if you're a CDL driver. They've got top pay, low-cost health, dental, vision, and life insurance available. Driver's going to get home weekly. It's out and back for 8 monthly bonuses. Also, it's an Oklahoma City-based company, new equipment. They've got some beautiful Peterbilt trucks and paid vacation. Again, a great owner, a great company, and it's fantastic opportunities for you here at MidCon Carriers. 9600 South Sunny Lane Road in Oklahoma City. Call them 405-237-1300, or you can check them out online, MidConCarriers.com. The Ultimate joins Mark Rogers next on the Leader in Sports, WWLS, the Sports Animal.